This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer. It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome to the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. I'm Poonam Verma in for Helen Farmer today. We were talking about boosting brain power with Dr. Shai, also getting the kids active. Unified Champion Schools is a new initiative to include all students of all abilities to get active. Jenny Mullen joins us from Festival of Schools, telling us how you can get involved with your kids' school. And we talk to a young man who is combating energy poverty. Afternoons with Helen Farmer is live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Stay tuned, because me and Zina are desperate to reverse our aging, and we're going to help you because we have expert on with us right now.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Today we're meeting an expert who can answer all your questions about boosting our brain power. Now, as we get older, the physical signs of aging are easy to see. Zina can count for this. The odd wrinkle here, a new grey hair. She's looking at me. Body aches. I feel them too. But what we can't see is what's happening inside our bodies. And our brain is not immune to aging either. Now, microscopic changes begin to occur in our brain cells as we get older. And this can lead to a decline in our memory function and cognitive abilities. But every person's brain is affected slightly differently. But normal aging, you can see it in like the difficulty of learning something new, more problems with multitasking, a mild decrease, let's say, in your ability to pay attention, you know, a struggle to remember even appointments. Now, while this is normal, and it's not a sign of Alzheimer's disease, so don't panic, or other dementias, many of us are searching for ways to remain sharper for as long as we age. And this is where hyperbaric oxygen therapy for brain health comes in, also known as HBOT. Joining me now is an expert in this field, Dr. Shai Erfati, a physician in short, but his full title is founder and director of the Segal Center for Hyperbaric Medicine and Research at Shamir Medical Center and chair of Aviv's Medical Advisory Board. Welcome to the show. That's quite a long title. You've been busy.
I'm happy to be here. I enjoy all the time coming to Dubai. It's an amazing place and I love being here.
Well, I have to say, I was watching some of your YouTube text talks and it was fascinating. And the first thing I noticed, I did say to my producer, Zina, is that what is he doing? Because he looks very youthful. So I'm assuming you're using this therapy yourself. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I want to function. I want like anybody else, you know, that we as physician, usually what we are doing today at the standard medicine is taking people to the average.
Yeah.
But for me, being the average to your age is not good enough. And we want to enhance higher than that.
So let's break this down first. Explain to us, what is HBOT, hyperbaric oxygen therapy?
With hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we are utilizing oxygen as a drug. And since oxygen is a gas, if we want to bring more oxygen, we need to compress it in a chamber. So by doing that, we are increasing the environmental atmosphere, doubling or tripling it, depends what the effect that we want to achieve. And by doing that, we are dramatically increasing the amount of oxygen that is delivered to the different organs in our body and also to the brain. This is one element.
Now, Continue.
The second element, which is even more important, is generating fluctuation in the oxygen from very high back to the normal. And by doing that, we are actually stimulating the what we call stem cells, cells that can differentiate into the tissues that is damaged. We can induce the proliferation, replication of the stem cells. And by that, we have more stem cells that can regenerate the tissue. So the protocol includes increasing oxygen and then doing a fast decline back to the normal. And by that, I'm summarizing something like 20 years of research in one sentence.
No, I can imagine. Now, when I was watching you, you said something important, which is we basically use 2 to 5% of our brain neurons. What I don't understand is how come as a human being we're not using 100% of our brain?
100% of the total capacity, because the brain was developed much faster than other parts of our body. And the oxygen, the blood flow to the brain is coming from two pipes. We call it carotid arteries that we have in the neck.
Yeah.
And this pipe and supply a certain amount of blood flow, certain amount of oxygen. So the brain uses at each time point all the oxygen that is being delivered. Since it's enough for 5 to 10% of the total brain capacity, the brain is doing preferential, meaning it will take the blood flow, the oxygen, to the part that is most important at this specific moment. Okay. If I'm moving the hand, it will go to the hand. There was a traffic before report. If I'm speaking on the cellular phone, then the blood flow will go to the area that are responsible for this conversation, and then I can miss a turn, for example. Okay, so this is biological limitation that we have.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Snow Wellness Centre Abu Dhabi, caring for your mental health and well-being. Call 800 Be Well.
We're talking about anti-aging for the brain, how to keep that memory of yours as sharp as a knife. And Dr. Shay Arafati is an expert in HBO2, which reverses aging through a medical procedure called hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So Dr. Shay, we're already getting questions coming through. Before I go to them, I do want to ask you something. Because we're talking about oxygen, obviously I'm assuming the environment plays a big part. So is there a lack of oxygen for people who live in busy cities compared to somebody who lives in the countryside?
The main issue, it's not a busy city. Of course, the busy city includes more CO2. Not with regard to the oxygen, the CO2 concentration, but people who are living at high, let's say mountain high, they have less oxygen. Also, when we are flying, for example, in an airplane, then also you have less oxygen in the airplane. That's one of the reasons when we are feeling very tired after a long flight, because the oxygenation there is lower. So it's not the pollution. Of course, the pollution doesn't do good. It's mostly the height, whether you're living on a mountain or at sea level.
So what is the ideal environment to live in for your brain to function at its best level, would you say?
The ideal will include fluctuation. Okay, everything that is stable and not being triggered is less good for the human biology. So ideal is to generate fluctuation, is to live like we're living here in Dubai at sea level, which is great. Mm-hmm. And if from time to time you can get to an environment like the chambers that you have over here now in Dubai, you know that in Dubai you have the most advanced and the biggest hyperbaric clinic outside of Israel, which is actually an amazing facility. So if you can work on a protocol to do fluctuation and to induce stem cells and the regeneration of your brain tissue, that will be the optimum.
Okay, so we're getting some text now. Rowan says, I've heard about this and my friend uses it. What does mushroom supplements do for the brain? Does it help it function better?
It's not helping, it functions better at the end, okay? But during the process, it's the tissue itself. By doing that, you have more brain, you have more neurons, you have more blood vessels in your brain. That's what it is. So it's not only the functionality, of course it's culminating better functionality, but it's actually having more brain tissue.
We all hear that doing proper exercise, eating well, meditation, this is all good for the brain and the body. Is that not enough though? Because is the quality of oxygen just generally on this planet not as good as it is, which is why this helps it better or helps it improve?
It's, we need to eat right, exercise in order to reduce the rate of expected declines. Okay?
Yeah.
Once we are eating good, non-smoking, exercising, then the pipes that we have in our brain, which is the blood vessels, can preserve their functionality. If we are taking, forgive me for saying that, shit in your, into your body, this shit go into the blood vessel and being stuck over there. And that cause occlusion and less oxygen to supply to the brain. In either case, like the pipes that we have in the house, during our lifetime, the pipes will be occluded no matter how clean the water are, but the rate will be slower. So we need an additional, we need a repair. We need to repair the pipes. We need to generate, to replace the pipe. And for that, you need assistant. And the assistant is coming from an outsider. The outsider in this case is, for example, hyperbaric oxygen therapy with unique protocol like you have here in Dubai, in the Aviv Clinic, that by doing that, you can actually generate more pipes that will replace the non-functioning pipes.
Okay.
That's, I'm trying to simplify things so it will be clearer.
Okay, I know you're doing your very best and we appreciate it because I know it's quite difficult. We are
family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So Dr. Shai Efrati is an expert in HBOT, which reverses aging through a medical procedure called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Dr. Shai, somebody has text saying, give us some real life experiences. What kind of effects has it had on people and how it's really helped them?
If, for example, you know that if we're speaking about age-related functional decline, usually the first thing that is deteriorating is the short memory, what we call working memory.
Yeah, you see, that's interesting because a friend of mine is quite young, in his 30s, and he says his short-term memory is bad, but his long-term memory is good. I don't understand that.
That's usually what happens. Usually the short memory is the first thing that is coming down. Usually not at the age of 30, I must tell you. It usually happens at a later stage.
Yeah.
But it usually starts with the short memory, with the working memory, with the coding memory. Because when we need to remember something, the first part is to code it within our brain. So if we are not coding, storing new information, there's nothing that we can take out because it's not there. If we already store the information and it's there, it's in a certain place in the brain that we can take it out, and that's it. It's already there. There is no need to invest energy in coding it. So usually the first thing that happens if we are speaking about age-related decline is the short memory. At a later stage, there is the information processing speed, the way our brain is processing things, and we can feel that at the beginning when we have a multi-person conversation, when we have people that are speaking with us simultaneously, and we need to pay attention to that and to that, and suddenly we cannot handle that. We need it one by one. And then comes the attention and all the rest. And the last thing that we tend to lose is the long-term memory. It can stay there until, unfortunately, until we are losing all the rest.
You know, it's interesting because my mom, obviously, she's older than me, 20, 28, 29 years older than me. Her memory is probably 10 times better than me. And the only reason I can put it down to that is I have too much information coming in. Maybe it's the job I'm doing or the life I'm living. And she doesn't. Does that play a role, the amount of information and stress around you?
It's the attention. If we need to memorize something, we need to give it attention. It has to be focused on a specific thing. I will give you an example.
Yeah.
If, for example, I'm crossing the road and there's a car that's going to hit me, I will look for a second on the number of the car. I will remember it for the rest of my life. However, if I'm walking along the side of the road,
yeah,
I will not remember any of the numbers of the cars that are going in. Why? Because my attention is not there. So as we said, the brain wants to save energy. He will never memorize something that we don't give to it attention.
So you're talking about attention. You know, they say women are very good at multitasking. That means we're putting our attention on several things. And I hear that's not very good.
I don't know if it's not very good, but women and males are being built differently. Okay, males are supposed to be hunters. They need to focus on a specific task while they are performing it, because otherwise they cannot bring food to the table.
Okay.
On the other hand, women are supposed to have multitasking because you need to pay attention to this kid, to this kid, to this kid, because otherwise nobody, they will not be able to handle on the environment. So our brain is built different for different tasks. Generally speaking, I think that women are much better than men if we are speaking about the brain, but this is only my perspective.
Oh, yes, I have to agree with you on that. So let me ask you, if I wanted to have this therapy, or anybody out there, how many sessions would we need to see some kind of improvement?
Okay, it's not that you're going in and immediately you have a new brain. It's a process.
Mm.
And we need to increase the stem cells, keep them up, so the repair mechanism will have the time. So generally speaking, with regard to the brain, if you want to gain an additional brain tissue, we are speaking about 60 sessions. It's daily session.
And how long is one session?
Each session is 2 hours, where
wow.
we are sitting in suite and where we can generate the fluctuation.
Well,
but it's not a waste of time.
I definitely need 60 sessions, because I have called you everything from Dr. Shay to Dr. Shy, and it's Dr. Shy. So I am going to stick to the right name.
We are family. Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So Dr. Shy, let me ask you a question. Does this therapy, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, can it help prevent in the long term Alzheimer's, dementia, things like that?
That's exactly the goal. What we are aiming to build up is a community which is Alzheimer-free, an Alzheimer-free community.
Mm.
The main issue with regarding to Alzheimer or dementia is that the process starts 15 to 20 years early.
Wow.
You don't see it. So if you want to prevent your dementia, if you want to prevent your Alzheimer, you need to start 15 to 20 years early. And if you are doing that and you have the resolution of imaging that is needed in order to evaluate the brain, then you can interfere and prevent the upcoming thing, which is dementia. But for that, you need to do it with high-resolution MRI, with functional and DTI, which is something that since 6 months ago you have in Dubai. You have, for example, at the Aviv Clinic, the most advanced MRI in the UAE. So we can see the brain in a resolution that we haven't seen before. And it's important to do an annual checkup for the brain. You know, we are doing annual checkup for the heart, doing exercise tests, doing blood tests for the kidney, for the liver, for cholesterol. But the most important organ in our body is the brain.
Mm.
So we need to evaluate that annually, see that if we are stable, then that's okay. We will reevaluate it the year after. But if there is a decline, we need to interfere. And if we are handling it that, then we can generate an Alzheimer-free or dementia-free community, but we should start earlier.
So when you're talking about starting early, what age can you start this therapy? What's the most suitable age?
Generally speaking, on the general population, let's say you don't have any genetic issue and you are a normal human being, the best will be to start at the age of 50 to 55 and start by evaluations, start by measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And if your evaluation is okay, then that's great. We can reevaluate the year after. But if there is a decline and we're seeing the decline, that's the time to interfere.
Do mobile phones affect our brain, the use of it, and our memory?
Everything affects our brain.
Yeah.
Everything. Okay. It can be affecting our brain in a good or a bad manner. Okay. If we want to look at the good in the cellular phone, today, what we are doing mostly with the cellular phone, it's not speaking. It's not using our vocal cords. We're mostly using our fingers.
Yeah.
Our brain to process the data, the huge amount of data that we gain from the cellular phone. So we're actually working with our brain. This is the good thing. The bad thing is, of course, there is some radiation that is being outside of our cellular phone. And this radiation, when we are putting the cellular phone near our ear, can definitely affect the brain.
Do you know what I find interesting? I go to restaurants these days and I'm calculating, let's say there's a discount or something. I will calculate it in about 20 seconds and the waiter, who's quite young, will still get a calculator. And I remember my dad was very, very fast because in those days we didn't have phones or calculators. So I feel like a lot of us have been depending too much on technology, which is where the brain is slowing down too. Would you agree?
That's absolutely. Actually, the young generation, the brains of the young generation are going to be quite different than our brains. For example, we are communicating by looking with somebody in the face. Okay, you have to meet something. You have to speak with him.
Yeah.
You have to see his face, the expression that he have in the face. The young population can sit one next to each other. They will not look at each other. They will look at the cellular phone and they will text in a way that we cannot imagine. So we see that the brain is being built differently, for the good and for the bad.
Yeah.
They have capabilities that we don't have. When I'm saying we, I'm above the age of 50, so I'm speaking about my generation. And I'm looking at my kids. I have a kid who is 21 and I have another kid who is 12. There's also a huge difference between them. One was starting to work with cellular phone and technology from the day that she was born, and the other one started at the age of 30. And already you can see the difference. Of course, that they are different than me. So it's a different brain. It's not better brain. It's not worse brain. It's a different brain, different capacity, different capabilities, who are more suitable for the current available, let's say, environment.
Okay. Well, Dr. Scheib, I have so many questions. I think we're going to have to get you back on because we need to go to the news soon. But I really appreciate you coming on the show and we will definitely get you on again soon. Thank you so much.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Now, PE shouldn't be the only time children are active in school. I used to love PE, I have to say. But this is the belief of John Smedley, a former teacher and founder of Teach Active. He's a former primary teacher and sports coordinator who works in partnership with the Youth Sports Trust and the founder of the UK's largest active learning day. He's helping schools in the UK to ensure they're getting enough exercise, even when in the classroom. John, sorry to keep you waiting. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. No problem. Yeah, I'm just joining you from the guest show here at the World Trade Center. So, taking a break from talking to head teachers and principals here to come and join you. So thanks for having me on.
So you're in Dubai right now?
I am in Dubai, yes.
And where are you from?
On Thursday and here for a week. So, the guest show is on for 3 days. We've got some other meetings and also going to take in a bit of sun while we're here as well.
Okay, now tell me about this mission you've got to get kids moving in the classroom. Aren't kids moving all the time anyway?
Perhaps that's a common belief, but no, we know that 70% of the school day is actually sedentary, and we actually know that 4 out of 5 children in the UAE aren't achieving the recommended amount of physical activity. And of course, that's, there's 5 hours plus in front of screen times, but it's maybe all the other positive things that come with physical activity that we know that it can help with children's memory and learning, and it can help with concentration, and also things like self-esteem and confidence and resilience and social skills and teamwork, which we really want to develop as well, and which 4 out of 5 children, they're not getting that amount of physical activity. So we have to be smart and think, well, how can we make the school day less active and incorporate a bit more movement?
I know that, kids are doing so much more online. We didn't grow up with that. But one thing I notice is I grew up in England too. So when I would finish school, one thing we would do almost every night is play outside on the street. So we'd be physically active. Now, in many countries, it's not as safe to do that. Is that affected them too? Just that socializing after school as well?
Yeah, I mean, well over in the UK, well over half of the children don't meet recommended guidelines. And therefore, the Department of Health and Department of Education have asked schools to be kind of responsible for that, if you like. We know, as you say, children are going home and things like Xboxes and PlayStations
exactly.
are perhaps taken over from playing out on the street. Mm. And therefore, it is a real battle.
So you've been doing this for 20 years. How did it start and why did you want to do this? What is it that you noticed 20 years ago that is still going on today as well?
Well, just from being with my, I'm teaching Korea and with being a deputy head, what I noticed is that actually children perhaps who didn't like maths and English lessons and actually were thinking, I can't do this, or I've got a lack of confidence. I thought actually I can get them to do that and enjoy these subjects and have that love of learning through physical activity. Physical activity is natural to children. They love it. They don't all love sport and PE, but they love being physically active.
So give me an example how you implemented that, let's say, into a maths lesson.
Okay, so for example, if we were doing some problem solving, rather than giving them 20 clues that I wanted, rather than giving them 20 problems on a piece of paper, I would actually put the 20 problems up outside and I would get them to go to one problem and the answer would tell them which one to go to next, and then which one to go to next, to next, to next. And therefore they will have completed all 20 problems which I wanted them to do, but they've been active, they've really enjoyed it, they've got a smile on their face, it's supporting attainment as well. And then also many other wider benefits that we spoke about, like social skills and teamwork, maths chat, number talk, which we're really developing the children as well.
So it's a little bit more work, though, to be more creative for the teachers. How have they taken to this?
Yeah, I think that in terms of when we get them to buy in, teachers are great, aren't they? And they want to work hard to make sure their lessons are engaging and fun. And this is exactly what that will do. And I think that what they do find is that the impact in terms of attitudes and attainment is certainly worth it. Mm. And when they can see the wide benefits that this is having.
So let's talk about obesity, basically. I mean, many children here in the UAE struggle with it. You know, at least 28% of children in the UAE last year were obese or overweight. Is this an issue in the UK too, that this program can actually help them with?
Yeah, it's a huge issue, you know, overweight and obese children. And what we do know from research is that inactive children, the majority of the time, leads to inactive adults. And physical activity is now the world's fourth biggest killer. Mm. And, you know, it causes all sorts of problems as an adult. So we know that 0 to 10 is the optimum age to try and instill good habits within children, and again, that's why we're working with primary schools all over the UK and now in the UAE to try and change that pedagogy and perhaps change the way that we teach.
You know, it's interesting because this is something that really needs to happen in offices too. And I worked at the company once, and every hour a song would play and we'd all have to get up and dance for 3 minutes, and we were like, "What is this?" But it made sense. It changed the energy. It shifted you a little bit. You know, broke you from that mental, you know, lit on the computer all the time. So it's something that should work for adults too, don't you think?
Yeah, it was certainly, and you know, I try and practice what I preach. In schools, interestingly enough, what a lot of schools have thought about is, if we have to get the children more active and we know the benefits, then maybe we're thinking of additional things to do. Yeah. And it might be stopping and doing an additional piece of exercise, or it might be doing more. And teachers find that hard because they're already extremely busy and the school day is tight. So I say, rather than do that, I want you to do what you're already doing, which is teaching English and maths, but perhaps get the children moving and not necessarily sitting down and at a desk, which is maybe your more traditional methods.
So you want to bring the scheme to Dubai. Where are you with that? When can we see it happening?
We're already in a school, so Teach Active itself is the resource, and that actually saves hours of planning time for teachers because there's 3,500 activities all done for them. We're in over 1,000 schools in the UK. We've now got a couple of schools in Dubai using the programme already, just from head teachers who have taken it from UK over here and into 6 other different countries. So yeah, the purpose of our visit to guests this year is to try and raise awareness and of course introduce it into more schools. So it's available now, and of course people can check it out.
Okay, well John, it's been an absolute pleasure, and we're both going to get active now. I'm about to play Bob Marley, so let's get up and dance.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So we're talking about sports, not just for the fastest, the most agile and those who have trained extensively, but for students of all abilities. There's one initiative that's aiming to do this, and so far 286 schools have signed up to ensure that this is happening on their premises. It's called Unified Champion Schools. And we're now joined by Kaula Bali, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who's head of initiatives at Special Olympics UAE, to tell us more. How are you, Kaula? Let's see if Kaula's there. Are you there, Kaula?
I am.
Yes, I'm good. Welcome to the show. Now, let's talk about this initiative, Unified Champion Schools. Tell us about your role at the Special Olympics UAE, firstly.
Okay, well, I have a great job. I am the head of initiatives at Special Olympics UAE, which means that I have the honor of working with a variety of programs, not just sports. So within the Unified Champion School program, which is by far our largest initiative, I work with schools in sports, in leadership. So we mentor student leaders and mentor teachers in the development of leadership clubs, as well as events within the school. We have unified robotics, as well as football and basketball and badminton, things like this.
Now, you believe that sports is a great pathway to inclusion, but why do schools have a hard time making it inclusive? And when you're talking about inclusion, what are we talking about? Is this for every single student?
Yes. So the Unified Champion Schools, when we say unified, we mean bringing together students of all ability levels as equals. And I think this is what's really important. So when students may have a developmental disability come to, let's say, a unified football team, they're working with their peers as one team. Mm. It's not about, you know, volunteering or one student teaching another. It's coming together as equals and allowing everyone to really contribute their talent and passion. And of course, whenever you're involved in an activity with other people of whatever their abilities are, you start to see what everyone can do. And what they can't do sort of fades into the background. So that's why, you know, sports is such a wonderful way to get kids and adults involved, break down barriers, develop relationships and friendships.
So give me some feedback. What have you noticed with the kids who, let's say, are playing hockey, tennis, netball, whatever it is, football, of all abilities, with kids of determination, with kids who are extremely, you know, athletic? What have you noticed about any changes, the compassion they have, the understanding they have, the friendships they develop?
Yeah. Well, all of those things. We, in 2019, I mean, we're very excited to be relaunching our Unified Football League, which we launched in 2019. And some of the feedback we got from kids and parents and teachers was really phenomenal. And what we heard is we heard story after story about kids who, you know, they were in the same grade, but they weren't really working together. They didn't really know much about each other. Mm. But after, you know, training on the same football team over the course of a number of weeks, coming out and having, you know, friendly matches with other schools, these kids are interacting more in the classroom and outside of the classroom. So we hear stories of kids who, you know, start having lunch together, start, you know, joining each other's friend groups, and really just breaking down those barriers that sometimes exist between students with and without disabilities.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because I once sprained my ankle and my friend took me to the mall and I said, I can't walk. So we asked them to put me in a wheelchair and she pushed me around the whole mall and I got some really odd looks. And they didn't, you know, there was those looks, poor thing. And I think it was a miracle when they saw me at the end stand up and walk off afterwards to get the taxi. But I noticed it a lot. And I think it's just that lack of interaction with people of determination of any type.
Well, and again, it's that, and that's what the Unified Champion Schools is meant to kind of shift that perspective. Because what people were seeing when they saw you in a wheelchair is they were seeing the wheelchair.
Yes.
Right? They weren't seeing you. And that's what happened, you know, kids that feel, you know, perhaps in a school there, they have accommodations, they have different abilities. Mm. Sometimes that becomes what everyone sees. But when you get involved on, like, we've had phenomenal success with unified robotics. So when these kids get together on a robotics team and they start to see their peers who they thought had different abilities and maybe not as many abilities, all of a sudden they're programming, they're teaching them, they're communicating, they have ideas, they're cracking jokes. they start to see them as people. You know, everybody on the team begins to see, you know, everybody's ability level, what they can do rather than what anybody cannot do.
Yeah,
so yeah. And one other thing I really want to point out is when we say unified, I mean, it is unified. And when you come out, anybody that comes out to a unified event, nobody has a disability or without a disability. Everybody is the same. And there's absolutely no division. And externally, you don't know. Do you know what I mean? Because it's not important. And that is really at the heart of the unified program, is just providing these opportunities to bring students together, young and old students. You know, we work with elementary schools through high schools, and really getting them out there and active and involved together, and just learning about each other and, you know, learning skills, learning about each other, making friendships, and having a good time.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So we're talking about sports for all students of all abilities. Joining me is Kamala Bali, the lady behind this. How are we implementing this Unified Champion Schools? How is it going to happen? Or has it already been implemented?
So we did roll out the Unified Champion School program in 2019, and we're cut a little bit short by COVID.
Yeah.
So we relaunched the program this year, and what the first step is for any school is to register with us. And you can register at www.specialolympics.ae, and that puts you in contact with Special Olympics, where you can learn more about the program, get involved in the programs that we have. We have teacher trainings. We have monthly meetings to guide schools through all of the various activities, as well as, you know, Unified Robotics is a very exciting program that will start registration in January, along with some of the sports leagues that are coming back after COVID-19. So that's the first step for any school. And I would also say to parents who are interested is ask your school, you know, ask your PE teacher or the SEN department if your school is involved in Unified Champion Schools. And if not, you know, encourage them to get in touch with us, and we can help them get involved.
So with the kids who, you know, are of determination, special needs, their parents, how do they feel about this project? What has been the feedback from them?
We've gotten incredible feedback because, I mean, again, all of this is happening within schools and within the community. And, you know, it's, again, about mixing together with all different ability levels, you know, making friends and learning skills. So we've had great feedback from parents of students of determination, just about the increased opportunities. And I know, like, through Unified Robotics, for example, we had a lot of parents who really didn't see their child engaging in robotics. You know, they would say, oh, he's still working on this skill or that skill, I don't think he's ready for robotics. And then to see them not only excel at this, but become engaged and really excited about something new is very, very, very rewarding for all parents, but especially parents of students of determination who may worry a bit more about their children's engagement level.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at people in the Special Olympics, I mean, I'm sorry, when I watch them, I'm like, I can't even do what they do. So I, as an average person, learn so much from the motivation, the determination more than anything.
Exactly. And it's about opportunities. And that's what we want to start creating in the schools, is that the sports program, the Unified Sports Program, again, are a way to start training from a young age, to keep training, to keep engaged, and hopefully, you know, be developing the next generation of Special Olympics World Games athletes.
Yeah. Okay. So, Kamala, thank you so much. Can you tell us where people can find out more information about this?
You can on our website, www.specialolympics.ae.
Thank you.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
are you active in your child's school? Do you even have the time? So many parents do it so they can get involved in their child's school life, but many also do it to be part of a community. And that's exactly what Jenny Mullen has observed. She's a senior editor at Which School Advisor, who are running the Festival of Schools. Welcome to the show, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, how active are you at your child's school or your children's school?
I'd love to be more involved, but I'm a full-time working mum and it's a challenge. But I am always incredibly grateful to the parents who do it. You know, the parents who are in there organising the events and, you know, the WhatsApp messages that remind you that today was Odd Socks Day at my children's school. That's so helpful and I'm so grateful for it. I would love to be more involved, but I realise I can't commit myself. But I think it's a really powerful thing to do if you can.
So tell me why you think it's so powerful.
There's an awful lot of research, first of all, that shows that being involved in your children's education is absolutely key to their success. And there's loads of reasons for that. I mean, first of all, I don't know about you, but primary school for my children, that they're 7 and 11, It is so very different to my experience of primary school. What they're learning, you know, I wouldn't have imagined that they'd be learning at this age.
What's the difference that you've noticed compared to when you were at primary school?
Well, the maths.
I've not learned. So you're basically saying we couldn't help them with the homework. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. Yeah.
I agree.
But it's just, it's the depth of curriculum and it's the breadth of the curriculum as well. You know, that they're, you know, my oldest has just done the First World War, and he's touched on some quite deep and difficult topics there, mm-hmm. which I'm certain that I didn't get to until secondary school. So I think, first of all, just really understanding what your children's day-to-day experience is at school is very, very powerful. Because their days, they're definitely more crammed and more arduous than my own primary school days. 100% sure.
You know, I agree with you.
Knowing that gives me a different perspective on when they get home and they just want to burst through the doors and eat snacks and not speak to anybody for 20 minutes because they're exhausted, you know.
I don't even remember when I was little coming home and having to do homework. And now my nieces, they're constantly doing homework and they're so young. So you're right, they have too much. I think they have a bit too much stress. I don't know. Or maybe their brain capacity can take it more than ours.
I'm a complete old hippie when it comes to homework. My children don't do it. And that's it. There you go.
So that's how involved.
They just don't do it. So I'd rather they were climbing trees of an afternoon.
But you see, that this is it. We're taking it back to our youth because I was talking earlier on the show. After school, I would play on the street for 2 hours. I'd be climbing the trees. Yep. I'd be on my bike. They don't do that because they've got too much to look at online now.
Yeah. No. Well, that's another topic. There's another fight that we have with parents, as parents these days, I think. But for me, you know, once the school day is done, they read at home. They might occasionally practice things like times tables. But other than that, we just, you know, their free time is their free time to enjoy, you know.
So what about the parents? Like Zina's joining me right now. So Zina's a producer. She has two kids. How involved are you with your school, your kids' school? And would you like to be more involved? Or as a full-time working mother, do you think, I'll leave them at school and that's fine for me?
Okay, so as a full-time working...
Let me put you in my corner. Go ahead.
Thank you, Poonam. Hi, Jenny. So as a full-time working mother, I am a complete parasite. I rely on the mums that run the WhatsApp groups and send the reminders. And I'd rather not sort of involve myself. But on Thursday, something happened. The Parents Association held a quiz night and I had said no. And then one of the parents, who's the mom of my daughter's best friend, said, you know, it'll be fun. So I finally went and I had a lot of fun. And I actually met the teachers and they're real people with different personalities. So I discovered a lot about my child's school. So it's always a good idea to get involved, I think. But it takes a lot for me to get roped into it.
Yeah, no, I do know for a fact that, Jenny, my sister-in-law in England, she says she tries to avoid a lot of the mothers at her kids' school because she really doesn't get on with them.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With King's College Hospital London in Dubai, bringing the best of British healthcare to the UAE.
How involved are you in your kids' school? Do you join in with activities? Do you help out with school trips? Text us on 4001. We're talking to Jenny Mullen, Senior Editor at Which School Advisor, who is running the Festival of Schools, to tell us more.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So Jenny, how open and how much freedom do a lot of schools give to parents to get involved?
That's a really good question, actually. Recently, we did a feature on school governors and what it is to be a school governor. Now, you mentioned being from the UK there, Poonam, and I think those of us who are, we're quite familiar with that concept of school governor. So they're volunteers who take on a very significant role in their school. So it might be something like being the safeguarding lead, or, you know, looking at the school's finances. And they're really people with a vested interest and a desire to take on some responsibility for the performance of that school. And that really varies from school to school here. Obviously, we still have a lot of new schools. So building up that community kind of commitment, and also, you know, the sort of longevity of members of their the community, it can take a little while. But certainly some of the longer established schools have got these fantastic school governance organizations full of volunteers. And I guess one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today is because if you're a mum who struggles to fit in work around being a mum, actually taking on a role like that in your child's school, it's very impactful for the school, it's very impactful for your child, but it helps you maintain the skill set.
True.
You know, if you're putting together, you know, great big budget events, some of the, you know, the type of events we've been working on the last few weeks, they're huge productions. You know, if you're working with your school to do that kind of thing, then you are doing, you know, you're covering event management, you are budgeting, you're marketing, all sorts of skills like that. So it's a great way, actually, you know, it's a great something to put on your CV in that sort of career gap that lots of us end up having.
That's true. But then what some people might say, well, I'm paying the school, this is the teacher's job, why am I doing this? What would you say to someone like that?
I think that in any role such as education or healthcare or anything similar to that, we need an outside perspective. We need someone else to help us evaluate. It can't always be these internal people, because they need a sounding board from outside of the school. You know, for example, if you're an accountant with loads of experience in, you know, dealing with big multinationals, and actually imagine bringing that experience to your school, that financial acumen to your school, and supporting them in some of the challenges. Yes, of course, lots of us are paying big fees here in Dubai, but that doesn't mean that we can't get involved and lend our skills, and our skill sets are still very, very important to the schools.
Yeah, and briefly tell us, what is the Festival Schools? I know there's 4 events coming up.
Well, we've done 2 already. So it started, kicked off at Safa British School. And then just this last Saturday, we're at GEMS First Point School. So the reason we've done them is really post-COVID to reconnect schools to their community. I am passionate about schools being a hub of our communities. And of course, their doors have been closed to all of us. I always say that my children's school, when they were little, it was my village. You know, as an expat, when you haven't got your family around you, that was my support network. It was where my friends came from. It was people I leaned on when the kids were little. And so the Festival of Schools was sort of born out of the idea, first of all, of reconnecting schools to their communities. And then, of course, you know, Which School Advisor, our purpose is to help people choose a school. So if you're new and you're looking for a school, you can also come along to the Festival of Schools, meet the leadership teams, and really find out more about the schools, but in a very kind of relaxed and fun way. You know?
Okay. And where can we find out more information, Jenny?
So come along to whichschooladvisor.com and have a look. We're next Saturday, we're going to be at Arcadia School, and the Saturday after that, so Arcadia on the 20th and Victory Heights Primary School at on the 27th. It's all completely free of charge. Come along. There have been fantastic family days out so far. So fingers crossed there are going to be some more brilliant events later on this month.
Thank you so much, Jenny.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Yeah, I was very much like Cyndi Lauper at 21. I just wanted to have fun. But a 21-year-old student completely opposite to me from Sierra Leone in West Africa has just won a global award for his work in trying to combat energy poverty. He joins me now. Jeremiah Thorenkes is studying a master's degree in sustainability at Durham University and has received a one-off prize of, get this, $100,000. And he is joining me now. How are you, Jeremiah? And many congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm doing great. It's a wonderful Sunday.
That is amazing. Now, hang on a minute. You actually had a congratulations personal one from the actor Hugh Jackman. He congratulated you. How was that?
It was terrific. It's one of those moments that you just go, wow, like, this is unbelievable.
So you mean this moment right now talking to me isn't wow? Hugh Jackman was wow.
It is.
I'm joking. Okay, now I know a little bit about your story. So first of all, tell everybody how you grew up and what kind of struggles you came across which led to you where you are today. Tell us about what it was like growing up in Sierra Leone.
As the cases of most places around the world that I'm coming out of civil war, you know, a lot of damages may have been done. In the country, you know, and most of people living in the rural areas tend to feel like the byproduct of civil war than in most places around the country. So, you know, it's around that chaotic scene that I was born and I grew up. And, you know, during the turn of the 21st century, you know, the challenges of climate change and the byproduct of climate change started manifesting itself. So, the community where I was growing up was of no exception, you know, flooding, like we started seeing flooding, a lot of people going to the forest to cut down trees, you know, all those challenges was happening during that time. So even though like all those things were happening, but then that also set the pace for me to realize it is my responsibility and the responsibility of young people to take up ownership and making sure that it changes these dynamics, you know, and making sure that these problems, you know, are solved from within or from the local, within the local community. So that is just like a brief overview of where I grew up and how, with all those challenges.
Well, I think you're amazing. I really do. At the age of 21, tell us a little bit about this device that you've actually invented.
Also, it's called the Optim Energy device, and basically, what it does is it absorbs kinetic energy. So how I came about this device is, you know, currently we're seeing a surge in urbanization. A lot of people are moving from rural areas to urban centers, right? And as they move to these places, there's huge demand for energy. You know, they want energy to power their houses for heat, for whatever reason, but people need energy on a daily basis. Mm. And there have been a lot of stress on, you know, the environment. You know, we keep on going to the forest, cut down things to power this, their energy need, you know. So for me, I started thinking on how we're going to use these enormous millions or billions of tons of kinetic energy that people exhibit while driving their cars, while walking on the road, moving with their animals, and see how we can use this kinetic energy or energy in motion that people exhibit and use it and power their energy future. So it's like the people are now becoming the fuel to power, to provide power for themselves.
Amazing.
So that's the whole thing the device does.
So I hear you also have another venture. You want to move into healthcare. Is that true?
Yes, it's something I'm considering, trying to see how we can use this device, you know, while we continue prototyping, you know, test it in health centers and see, you know, the potential it to have, because most of the time in sub-Saharan Africa, health systems like are one of like these most challenging, like they face these energy challenges that, you know, make people go to give birth, you know. Some people lose their lives, you know, kids continuously lose their life because most health facilities don't have like adequate electricity supply. So what if, due to this high number of people that visit health clinics or hospitals on a daily basis, we also see how we can leverage on that and power hospitals?
Well, I think the fact that you're so young and you're helping your community and country is incredible. And I think we need to all keep an eye on you, as I have a feeling you're going to make a lot of waves. Elon Musk needs to move over. A new entrepreneur is coming along the way, I feel.
I'm humbled.
It's a beautiful thing that the struggles that you've seen and you've experienced firsthand during the Civil War, how you're helping and putting that back at such a young age. So I don't even know you, but I'm very proud of what you're doing right now, Jeremiah.
Oh, thank you so very much.
So thank you so much for joining us. And we'll have to talk again and see where you're going with your next project into healthcare. That's Jeremiah, who a pretty amazing kid, actually. He's just won $100,000 and he's trying to combat energy poverty. He won a global award.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.